The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells,
about residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there,
and the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle, stories about life on the inside told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Many of us in Georgia are moving away from talking so much about COVID-19, but the nation's Democratic vice president and Georgia's Republican governor have not finished, though they look at things differently. Meanwhile, a former Atlanta U.S. attorney is at the center of a new revelation about the Trump administration's efforts to overturn Georgia's 2020 election. And a former Atlanta city administration's spending habits are the subject of an audit just in time for this year's mayoral election. It's another full menu for this edition of The Political Breakfast. Please make yourself comfortable. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Our regulars are back, Republican strategist Brian Robinson and Democratic strategist Theron Johnson. Welcome to you both.
Thanks, Dennis.
Thank you, Dennis.
Well, Georgia continues to lag behind much of the rest of the nation in getting folks vaccinated against COVID-19. So the week ended with a visit from Vice President Kamala Harris, little tour aimed at encouraging more folks to get the shots. This came, though, after Georgia turned down millions of doses that had been allocated to the state by the federal government because the demand is so low. And then the day before the vice president's visit, Governor Kemp and First Lady Marty Kemp paid a visit to the Latin American Association's vaccination outreach site, accompanied by Public Health Commissioner Dr. Kathleen Toomey. Brian, the announcement of the governor's visit to the Latin American Association came days after we knew the vice president was coming. So couldn't it be argued that his move was kind of a political and a reactive one, given the low rate of vaccines in the state and particularly in communities of color, given the criticism that he hasn't been proactive enough about that?
Yeah, and I don't think the criticism of him on that score is fair or accurate. I mean, he spent most of the last 15 months talking about this, coronavirus issues in general, and more lately about vaccines. Of course, it's not the only thing that he talks about. He has a really big job. He's got a lot of things that are important to our daily lives. He has not ignored the need for vaccines. He has consistently said this is something that you should do and encourage Georgians to do it. This is just part of that ongoing effort. And I commend him for going to the Latin American Association because we have some particularly low vaccination rates in that community. And of course, as we saw in the news early last year, many Latin Americans here work in conditions where they are close together, where there's perhaps more exposure, more vulnerability. So I commend him for doing that.
Theron, communities of color, including Latinos, have been hit harder than others by COVID-19. They've had problems in accessing the vaccines. And as Brian mentioned, many of them work in occupations where their risk of exposure is greater. Can a single visit by the governor to the Latin American Association change his narrative about that Brian was just talking about?
Well, it's a start. And the fact that he's actually going, he should be commended. But what's going to be really important to me, Dennis, is to see the follow-up and the engagement after the visit. I suspect, and Brian will probably know this better than me because he's very close with some senior staff members in the camp administration. I want to believe that there's been interaction and an open door policy to the Latin American community to talk about this crisis. And that's really what it is. I mean, Dennis, you've seen the national news and local specials about how the Latino community was hit very, very hard, particularly in North Georgia from this deadly pandemic. And then I've been saying for months that people of color, particularly brown and black people, are disproportionately affected by this deadly disease. So going forward, I think that the governor understands that he's got to be a governor for all Georgians. And I think you will see an emphasis on weaving into his public comments and in his plan, making sure that he specifically addressed the issue in the black and brown community of not only just getting vaccines, but also making sure that they are protected and they're educated about dealing with COVID-19 as we move forward.
But as for the timing of it, very quickly for both of you, Vice President Harris announces she's coming. All of a sudden, the governor says, I'm going to the Latin American Association. Coincidence? Theron, I'll start with you.
I'm not going to say that it was a reactionary move by the governor. I would suspect that he had been planning to do it. To your point, though, Dennis, what probably escalated and expedited that decision is now when you have the vice president of the United States coming back to your state twice, highlighting an issue that is very important to you, that definitely probably expedited his decision to go.
No, it has nothing to do. They don't care whether or not she's coming to do vaccination things. If anybody should be following the lead of the other, the vice president should be following the lead of Governor Kemp and going to check on the crisis at the border, which she still refuses to do and gets really cranky when you ask her about it.
But what was Governor Kemp doing at the border when Georgia has a lot of other things going on, as you have said, Brian, and we don't have a border with Mexico?
No, but our resources, our population is impacted by illegal immigration over the border. It is a direct impact on this state.
I don't know sort of the inner thinkings and sort of inner network of the governors as far as when he decided to visit Latin Americans, but I think it's really the reverse, and I disagree with Brian. I think if anything, they can learn something from this administration. While the governor has done his part, I mean, Brian is exactly right. He was very visible and very vocal in the beginning, encouraging people to get their vaccines. I mean, let's not forget, he set up multiple sites across the state. But the fact that the vice president is coming back to Georgia is for a reason. And that is because we lack behind. We're near the bottom of the list when it comes to people that have at least received their first vaccine shot. And so that's why you see the federal government stepping in to work with the state to raise this awareness.
You know, and what I'll say to wrap up there, Dennis, is his trek to the border a political action? And of course it is. Is that as well? This is an issue that remains of importance to Georgia voters.
Georgia Republican voters particularly, and he is facing a primary challenge from at least one person as we speak.
And there's very few ways to speak to that concern and that interest in the issue that provides the right visual. And going to the border shows that this is top of mind to you, that you take it seriously, that you share the concern of the voters in your primary. It shows action and leadership and using the bully pulpit to bring attention to an issue. So is it political? Yeah, but everything they do is political. I mean, everything Kamala Harris does is political. It can be both, and it always is.
Well, all of this has a reignited talk about expanding Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. Of course, Georgia has resisted doing that for years, losing matching federal money in the process. And Governor Kemp has proposed an alternative in the form of a state waiver plan, which the Biden administration has so far said it will not approve. But now we have word that a record 600,000 Georgians have signed up for Obamacare health coverage for the current plan year. Brian, it doesn't sound like the Kemp administration is doing anything new publicly on Medicaid expansion or on revising its waiver plan to meet what the Biden administration is concerned about. But is there anything happening quietly there that you know of?
No, I don't think anything other than there's a July 1st deadline for the federal government to make some moves on that waiver. You know, as Theron knows, because we've discussed this recently, I appreciate what Governor Kemp has done. I think he has moved the ball forward on this Medicaid issue by taking on the waivers. But to get to the waiver process, what that means is that we're going to have a limited Medicaid expansion that doesn't cover as many people as a full expansion does. That had to get through the General Assembly. They had to approve it to move forward on it. And they did. And they did it without opposition. And what that shows you is that the Republican base opposition to anything that has any connection to Obamacare has receded. Nobody's talking. Nobody talked in 2020's election cycle or even in the 2018 election cycle about repealing Obamacare. There are elements of it that are here to stay. And the concern in the past would be that the federal government would get us to sign on and then would cut back the benefits and the state would be left holding the bag with this massive cost.
Yeah, the benefits from the feds would eventually be phased out. That was the concern that your old boss had, Governor Deal.
Absolutely. That was and Governor Deal had been a Medicaid expert from his time in Congress as a chairman of the healthcare subcommittee. So he knew this stuff back in the 40s and had some principled reasons for his opposition. But today we're in a different ballpark than then. It's not going anywhere. Right now, if the state expands Medicaid, the stimulus bill that passed in the spring allows any state that hasn't expanded yet to expand and is completely free to the state for 2 years. No state cost whatsoever. Why would we not cover 400,000 to 600,000 additional Georgians, many of whom are at home caring for a sick relative, people who have illnesses themselves, people who are in school? I think the Republican pushback has been, we don't want the federal government giving health care coverage to able-bodied adults who won't work. Well, the statistics don't back up that that's who this is. Now, there's some of that. And that's not who this program is supposed to be for. And I'm for safeguards to keep those people out of it, if that's possible. But that is not what the vast bulk of people who would get it, those aren't the circumstances they're in.
Okay, so the next step might be, okay, if we need to pass a new waiver plan in the legislature, something that will update what the governor originally proposed to the Biden administration, is that something that could show up on the agenda for the special session, which is primarily going to deal with redistricting?
I've been told it won't. I don't think Governor Kemp has a particular interest in having anything else on the call, as they call it. That's his order for the special session. I think it makes sense to focus on redistricting. That's tense and stressful enough. If there is something that is imminent for the state that they have to tackle, maybe he can tack on something that we're not talking about today, but will be in the fall. But, you know, here's the thing, Dennis, I'm not saying we need a different waiver plan. We just need to do a regular expansion. We're leaving billions of dollars on the table over the next decade. We are going to lose more rural hospitals, lose physicians in rural areas, and destroy the economies in those places that are already hurting because no business is going to go to a place without a hospital. It's just how it is. So we should do this. The politics have changed. Republicans aren't opposed to it anymore. And it's free. So let's just do it. I mean, y'all, people who listen to this show know where I am most conservative is on spending. I just bristle. I had a huge problem with a lot of the populism of the last 4 years in my party because I believe we're bankrupting this country that we love and that I have consistently called the greatest on earth on this show over the last month. And I am saying we should do this.
Theron, you think Republicans in the legislature will go for full Medicaid expansion now? I mean, even Brian is saying it should happen.
Dennis, I want to come back to Vice President Harris' visit to Atlanta really quickly. I'm really happy that she's doing this, as they've sort of framed it, the We Can Do This tour. We know that not only Georgia, but other states are lagging behind right now and sort of getting vaccinated. And so this is going to be something I think that they will continue. And I just really want to commend the Biden administration and particularly Vice President Harris for going on this bus tour. They have a very robust deadline, some numbers to meet by the July 4th date. And so very happy that they're spending time and really going in areas that really need to increase their vaccination rates. And then as far as Medicaid expansion, look, I think Brian is right. I mean, the state has changed. We've evolved. You know, for a long time, Dennis, it was all about President Obama being attached to Obamacare. And, you know, I like to always refer to it as the Affordable Care Act. Now you're starting to see, as you mentioned, 600,000 plus people enrolling in Obamacare. And it's not just a black and brown or metro Atlanta issue anymore. I mean, the rural areas are benefiting from Obamacare. And as Brian mentioned, it now economically makes sense. Will it happen in the legislature during a special session? Probably not, but I do think it should. But if not this upcoming special session, I think Speaker Ralston sort of opened the door with his comments on this podcast, at least sort of not shutting it down completely as far as having a conversation. So I do think we need to not only have a conversation, but I think Republicans and Democrats have got to work together to fully expand Medicaid in Georgia.
On another subject, the 2020 election continues to loom over 2021. The revelations just keep coming about the Trump administration's efforts to overturn the results of last November's election that made Joe Biden president. And this time, a former Atlanta U.S. attorney is in the middle of the latest disclosures. The House Oversight Committee released some emails, which, according to the committee Democrats, show that then U.S. Attorney B.J. Pak, a former Republican state lawmaker, was among those subjected to pressure by Justice Department officials to talk about using government resources to push the lie that there was fraud in Georgia's election results. And those results, of course, gave Biden Georgia's electoral votes. The emails show that top Justice Department officials focused on Atlanta and then asked B.J. Pak to contact them. Pak suddenly resigned without giving a reason at the time, but the Wall Street Journal reported subsequently that the White House pressured him to quit because Trump administration officials thought he was not enthusiastic enough about their false claims of fraud. Brian, B.J. Pak is working on arranging an appearance before the House Oversight Committee. Is this another risk for Georgia Republicans as they head into another election cycle after a convention in which their leadership tethered itself again to Trump?
It's not what we can be talking about in 2022, and I would rather not be talking about it now. Now, granted, what we're seeing here with B.J. Pak going before Congress, that's not something Republicans are pushing. This is a Democratic committee that, of course, wants to push this narrative for the very reason that I don't want us talking about it. And so there's, you know, there's a political element in this as well. But what this does, this news, I don't think comes as a surprise to us or our listeners. We discussed it in January when it was happening. I thought the story had some interesting details. Like, he gets a call, you know, 10, 11 p.m. one night, and his resignation letter is out before 8 a.m. the next day. So he obviously got off the phone and typed it up immediately. I think I would have done the same thing in B.J. Pak's shoes.
You know, what's missing here, Dennis, is, and I know maybe Brian has said this previously, but if not, then I have to say it, is that why don't, you know, Georgia Republicans just come out and tell the truth. And that is that they had a person that was leading their party and the White House who was just a bully. He was a liar. He wanted to encourage people to steal an election, to destroy our democracy. And to me, we can't look this over. I agree with Brian on the details. I mean, B.J. Pak basically probably said, you know what, I'm not going to jail. And I don't agree that this is something that a committee is just bringing up for political purposes. No, it is a dark part of our history. It is a dark part of this country that we've got to highlight. I mean, President Donald Trump literally wanted people to lie. He wanted people to commit a crime. He wanted corruption. He wanted his people to email folks at 10, 11 o'clock at night, have conversations and bully them into breaking the law. And I think that is what he needs to be remembered for. And the Republicans don't want to say it that explicitly. And that's what I'm going to say on this podcast, because if it was the reverse, Dennis, and if President Obama, then the Republicans will be just calling him everything under the sun. And they did that anyway without him even doing the things that I'm talking about. So what's going to be interesting now, Dennis, is what will BJ Pack say and how is he going to say it? I think he is a Republican who will probably have future ambition. I believe he's going to tell the truth. But also, this is going to your point, Dennis, just highlight the bad part of the Georgia GOP who still refuses to admit that this man was the person that actually led to the defeat of their two U.S. senators. And, you know, it was my two U.S. senators, too, because they represented Georgia, but they were Republicans. And that they're still terrified of this guy who, quite frankly, just wanted people to commit unethical and corrupt behavior. And I think that's going to be interesting to me to see what would be the response from the Georgia GOP once BJ Pack goes to Washington or virtually testifies in this hearing, where people are going to see that Donald Trump is not the person that many Republicans want to believe that he is, that he literally was a criminal and he wanted people to commit criminal activity.
Brian, doesn't this go beyond former President Trump then, though, in that the issue here is the use of government offices to try to overturn an election?
Yeah, and I think that's a legitimate issue to look at. I have been very clear about where I stand on these things, and I have sincere problems with either side of the political aisle. And let's not forget that Democrats are pretty guilty on this as well, in undermining faith in our elections.
What do we do? How do we try to overturn the election by abusing our electoral power? I'm waiting to see how we're guilty of that.
That's not what I said. I just said that y'all have undermined faith in the electoral system as well. And I do think that there is a difference when you storm the Capitol. That is a difference. But I do think that this attack on the credibility of the election is a bipartisan affair.
Democrats have never used the office of the president and the powers that come along with the Department of Justice to try to overturn democracy. We've never done that. Have we highlighted voter suppression? Yes. Have we highlighted some of the irregularities? Yes. Some of the challenges? Yes. Do we use fair comparisons and motivation tactics to energize our base to vote? Yes, but not to commit insurrection and sedition at the Capitol. So there's a huge difference, Brian, about how we encourage people to vote versus the Republicans who are trying to overturn democracy and overturn an election outcome because they didn't like it.
My point wasn't about the insurrection, and I made the distinction there. It is about undermining faith in our election, and Stacey Abrams has still never conceded her loss in the gubernatorial race in 2018. Hillary Clinton certainly raised a lot of questions about the election in 2016, as did a lot of other Democrats. Your former boss, John Lewis, called President Trump an illegitimate president. That is dangerous language. And I don't care who you are, whether you're on my team or yours. I don't like it because I love America. And I am worried about us crushing faith in our institutions.
But Brian, the point here is overheated rhetoric is one thing. Using the Justice Department to try to overturn an election is quite another.
I don't disagree. I think that the Justice Department has a legitimate role in investigating anything that it sees as irregularities. I can assure you that the DOJ would do it if it was Democrats crying foul. They would have investigations. At the end of the day, the safeguards within the DOJ did win out. There was a stance taken within the department saying, we're not going any further than this. So that's why I think institutions are so important. Safeguarding them is so important, is that people will stand up and go, we're all going to quit if you do this. And that's what happened in this situation.
Meanwhile, though, Reuters reported this week that the threats to Republican Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger continued well into this year, including an April 24th death threat against his wife and family. Raffensperger told CNN that they had to keep their grandchildren away from their home. Now, he faces a primary challenge from a couple of Republicans, including Congressman Jody Heiss. Brian, Congressman Heiss is going to be making his case to be the state's top elections official after he voted to overturn the presidential election result in Georgia, which was triple checked in an audit and a recount. So is this going to have any effect on his campaign if he makes it to the general election at all?
Yeah, if he makes it to the general election, this is certainly going to be a point of attack by the Democrats, what he has said on our elections and what he has done on the elections, how he's voted in Washington on that is reflective of his congressional district. It's less widely popular, you might say, in a general election. And so it's going to be a challenge. He could very easily spend the entire fall answering questions demanding that he back up the charges that he has made. So he's going to have a careful balance about going out and saying those things again and promoting that record to people in his base that like what he did versus getting that group in the middle that is essential to getting anyone over 50% in Georgia today. And yes, that's going to be a challenge. And I appreciate the chance to talk about it because I say this every week. We don't need to be talking about 2020 and 2022. It is not a winning formula.
That's fine. And I was doing the same thing before we start winning in Georgia, right? Because I always wanted to talk about the future and not the past, right? But I'm not going to let that happen on this podcast. No, you have to address the past. And the past is now we are talking about a Secretary of State who Brian supports, right? And has stood up for him on this podcast many, many times when he was being called out and bullied by President Trump. And one of the things, Dennis, that you focus on the stories, and it just proves one thing to me that this country and the state is still very divided. And we have a lot of work to do to bring people together. But it also shows that there's just a lot of people who are still not over the 2020 election results. And Gabe Sterling, who worked for the Secretary of State, made it very clear at a press conference. And this was a moment where Republicans could have reversed course. He said that if we don't stop this rhetoric, this divisive behavior, this divisive language, then someone is going to get hurt. And now
he said that right around Christmas time. And Gabe Sterling has been a guest on this podcast.
Correct. And, you know, and so that was a moment where Republicans could have said, you know what? All right. We're not going to spread this divisive rhetoric and these lies, and we're going to let the election process just play itself out. And I think some Republicans listened to him and some didn't. So ultimately, what we got to talk about is making sure that elected officials like the Secretary of State are protected. And these death threats, I'm so happy that, you know, they were able to share that with us, because that went on during the Civil Rights Movement when, you know, we talked about my old boss, John Lewis, always talked about how during the Civil Rights Movement, because they were trying to give people access to vote, were investigated by the FBI, received death threats, their homes were bombed. And, you know, what you're seeing now is now in 2021, a Secretary of State who I believe wanted Republicans to win. He said that, but he also wanted to make sure we had some fair and secure elections. And now his life is being threatened. His kids' lives are being threatened. His wife's life is being threatened. So I think, you know, while we want to focus on the future, and that's great, it's just a dark path in the Republican Party that they've got to deal with. And I think the Democrats have a fiduciary duty to talk about the things that happen. But we also need to focus on the future as well. And I think that's what we're doing.
Brian, real quickly, doesn't this present Republicans with a dilemma in the sense that these threats continue to be revealed? And if you want to talk about the future, don't Republicans have an obligation, moral one, if you will, to say, wait a minute, you know, this should not be happening? In other words, do what Gabe Sterling did. And there have been crickets from a lot of them.
I don't think there's anybody that's okay with threats of violence, at least not anybody that I know. And it is very disturbing. I was around the Capitol some during those times when the threats were coming in, and seeing the Secretary of State's office staffers who were issued a bulletproof vest and were at one juncture evacuated from the Capitol. That is surreal. And you can hardly believe that this is happening in this temple of democracy that where I worked for a long time and just revere it, and to go in and out of it and feel like you are a target, that you are in danger for being there, was very disconcerting.
And so shouldn't there be more Republican voices raised saying this is wrong?
Well, let's not forget that the stories we're talking about are not contemporaneous. These are stories that happened 6 months ago. So it's a little different than when it's an ongoing threat. I don't know that there's still police sitting outside of Brad Raffensperger's house anymore. I think that is the distinction here.
Someone has got to speak up. Who's going to say it? Who's going to step up? And yeah, they may lose some Republican, some support, some Republican donations, but they want to just ignore that they elected a man, a former president, who was the ringleader in causing all of these things that we're seeing unfolding now. And it's just the American way. You have to do sort of a political autopsy of what happened. You have to do research. You have to have committees sort of look into things and investigate. It happens. And I just think we got to make sure that we tell the history, but also Republicans need to speak up and say what happened and what is probably still happening is wrong. And they need to join some Democrats in saying that.
On that subject, the U.S. House voted this week to give gold medals to the law enforcement officers who defended the U.S. Capitol during the January 6th insurrection. But 21 Republican House members voted no, including three from Georgia, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Andrew Clyde, and the aforementioned Jody Heiss. They cited issues that they had with the language of the bill. Theron, the Democrats have expressed a lot of outrage about the votes by these three Republicans, but politically, given the makeup of their districts, as Brian referred to earlier, is there anything Democrats can do about it other than redouble efforts to defeat Jody Heiss statewide should he win the Republican nomination for Secretary of State?
Well, politically, we're going to have to put up some good candidates in some very conservative districts, right? But also, it's not left up to Democrats. It's left up to, I think, some Republicans to look at that. You know, you want to love America, right? You want to say you're America first. You know, you want to believe in protecting the men and women in law enforcement. Well, when you had an opportunity to vote to do that, you declined or you didn't vote at all because you say you have problems with the language. And so, yes, you know, we're going to have to wait to see what happens in redistricting, put some good candidates up. But I think the voters in those districts have to pay very close attention to what happened, and they're going to have to change it, not just Democrats.
Brian, these three folks voted to reject the certification of Joe Biden's win in the Electoral College. And remember, Jody Heiss is the one who sent out an Instagram post just hours before the January 6th insurrection, in which he said, "This is our 1776 moment." Now, to be fair to him, he said he was referring to the Electoral College certification vote, not to the riot that was about to happen. But there's going to be political fallout from this.
No, I don't think there's going to be political fallout from this. I think this is kind of what people have come to expect. I don't know that this hurts the three members of Congress from Georgia who voted no in their districts. And in fact, they have been backed up by their voters every step of the way as national media or Democrats or even some other Republicans, you know, express outrage about what they do. So, no, there's no political fallout. This is status quo for the most part. And what they have said, and this isn't my viewpoint, as listeners know, I'm pro-police. I am disgusted by the way that they've been attacked largely by Democrats over the last year. Regardless of how you feel about the leadership of the Capitol Police or the leadership at the Capitol in the House and Senate that didn't take proper precautions when many people were raising concerns about a possible outbreak of violence, you still have to stand by the men and women who put themselves in harm's way and took on that mob. I would have voted yes. I am appreciative that the majority of Georgia Republicans voted yes. The three who voted no say that the reason they voted no was because there was some language in that legislation that they disagreed with. And they have said there is alternative legislation to honor the police that doesn't have the language they object to and that they support that other language. So what they're saying is, well, we back the blue too. We don't back this particular bill, but we're happy to vote for a different bill. I'm not defending that. I don't want to go any further on this because I told you I would vote yes. But to give you the behind the scenes look, that's what they are saying. We're not anti-police. We would support a different bill that honors them.
And there is much more on the Political Breakfast. We'll return to the city of Atlanta for a look at an audit on spending in the previous administration and a look at something we've been meaning to get to for quite a while, that toxic leak at Sterigenics. That and more when the Political Breakfast continues. Stay right here.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
And we are back on the Political Breakfast. Thanks very much for hanging out with us. I'm Dennis O'Hare with Republican strategist Brian Robinson and Democratic strategist Theron Johnson. Days after former Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed announced he's running to get his old job again, a forensic audit of the Reed administration's chief financial officer found what it called a serious lack of control of spending by top administration officials. Also found that the rules that applied to lower-level city employees about spending did not apply to those at the top. The former CFO, Jim Beard, is under federal indictment on charges of fraud and weapons violations, charges to which he has pled not guilty, we should point out. Theron, before we get into this, a little full disclosure. As we have mentioned before, you are considering a run for mayor. Are you still considering?
Well, Dennis, I have made it a point to talk about on this podcast my plans because, one, Brian Robinson has taught me. I think I've had a sort of a miniature media training with him over drinks over the years. You know, control your own narrative and do it on this podcast, Dennis, where, you know, you, the three of us have control. Yeah, I have decided that I am not going to run for mayor, but even though I won't be on the ballot, I will be very, very involved in the process of electing the next mayor of Atlanta. So be that as it may, it now frees me up to be back a sort of analyst that I am on this show all the time. And I want to say something else about that, Dennis. I want to thank you for allowing me to get to that process on my own. You and Brian have been extremely supportive of this journey and making a decision. So I just want to thank you all publicly for that. So let's now that I'm not in the race, let me just, you know, start some mess here. Brian indicated something a week ago when we had a very interesting conversation about former Mayor Kasim Reed, and Brian made some points about how he believed that he'll be able to position himself in the conversation around public safety. You remember I pushed back and said, yeah, that's really good, and you're right. He definitely has some points that he's been talking about. But, you know, let's not forget we got other people in the race who also have a very robust public safety plan. Now what you're seeing, Dennis, is a challenge from the former mayor, which we talked about, and that is how do you defend your previous administration while trying to run for a third term as mayor. You know, many elections, if not all of them, are about the future. So people are able to express their vision. But one of the challenges of being a former elected official in any capacity is that you have a record to run on, right? One of the advantages of being a candidate for office that had never run for office before is that you don't have a record. But that can also be a disadvantage, right? Because you can't say, I did A, B, C, and D when I was in office. So what this audit showed was that, unfortunately, Atlanta is going to have to revisit a dark period in our history at a time where, you know, there was a lot of investigations, a lot of people who pled guilty, people who were convicted some wrongdoing, some crimes that were committed under the previous administration. I do believe that Jim Beard deserves his day in court. Let's not rush to judgment. Let's let that process play itself out. But the timing of this audit, the amplification of the audit, who was talking about the audit, Dennis, is just sort of a quick snapshot on what you're going to see in this race. However, I do believe that the former mayor had to know that this was coming. And I believe that the former mayor is going to be prepared to answer a lot of tough questions that are coming his way pretty soon.
Yeah, very quickly, he gave an interview to WSB TV in which he apologized for things that happened during his administration. I'm presuming that's one of the things you're talking about as he's getting out front. But very quickly to you first, Theron, and I'll go to Brian. You talked about elections being about the future. Given that crime and other issues are probably more important to voters these days than the spending that went on in the Reid administration, is this going to have any effect on his chances?
Well, one of the things we also need to point out is that that interview that he did give an apology, it happened before he announced that he was running. So the point that I'm making is that this audit comes out days after he announces. And so that apology was not directly for that audit that really revealed a lot of unfortunate information, again, about a previous administration that a lot of us want to not revisit. I mean, I'm actually on the flip side now. Brian didn't want to talk about some of the stuff that happened in the Republican Party. I don't really want to talk about some of the stuff that happened in the former mayor's administration. But when I say that the elections are about the future, Dennis, it's about who has the best vision of the future to focus on crime, to focus on homelessness, to focus on affordability, to focus on infrastructure. That's what I mean. But no, let me make it very clear. The preeminent issue of the city of Atlanta elections, not just in the mayor's race, but every single race, is going to be crime and who he, she, or they have the best focus and the best vision to how to deal with it is going to ultimately, I think, win. And I think the voters in Atlanta are looking for someone that can bring folks together, build the right coalition to address this issue.
Brian, the current mayor, Keisha Lance Bottoms, met with Atlanta business and community leaders and promised to continue to make public safety a priority. So again, that highlights how crime is top of mind. Is the spending audit going to really matter in former Mayor Reid's campaign?
I think Kasim can run on a campaign that he will have a plan to fix the crime problem, which, as I have said on the show before and got some interesting pushback from liberals on Twitter about this, but the issue is crime, crime, crime. And I think he's got a strong issue. He gets it. And the other candidates get it. Felicia Moore, the city council president, when she got in, she made crime a major issue. You've got Sharon Gay, who is getting some traction, who announced her public safety advisor last week, another way of showing that she is zeroed in on that issue. And the fact is, we're not going to fix the problems that we have overnight. We've got a 400 officer shortage in Atlanta, and that's not going to get any better as long as there is this culture of blame the police first. We're not going to have enough good men and women. We have many good men and women out there in uniform protecting us every day. Until we have some support for the police. And right now, you see police taking early retirements around the country because the culture is bad.
Real quickly then, on the issue of the spending audit, because crime is top of mind, are you thinking that the spending audit from the Reid administration is really going to have much of an effect on his campaign?
I think he's going to have a lot of questions to answer about his administration, as Theron was saying. And he knows that, and he has gone out and attacked those weaknesses head on in his rollout. He's apologized for the corruption. He's apologized for the mistakes, the misuse of city credit cards, the big bonuses to his cabinet members. There were problems, and he is going to address those and continue to address those. And the thing is, his opponents are going to continue to address those. They're going to, if they do their job, they're going to keep those issues front and center. But one thing really going in Kasim's favor right now is the unrest in the city particularly those people, for example, in Buckhead, who are so mad they want to secede from the city and create the city of Buckhead. They all remember, and I would say other parts of the city of various demographics, remember an era of good times, an expanding economy, safe streets, a time when the city of Atlanta was riding high, which is no one feels like that's the case right now. So I think he's going to benefit from nostalgia.
That's the word I was going to use, and Brian said it, and I'm going to say this. What the audit shows and what I think is going to talk, you know, is how it's going to be positioned in this mayoral race, it's going to come down to credibility. You know, who has the best credibility based on their former jobs and current jobs, former records, current records? Who has the credibility to lead this city? And then secondly, you know, I want to point out something else that, you know, again, we don't say on this show, but I'm going to say it. Everything that we just read in this audit, which was all those things that you mentioned, Dennis, that it was just out of control, right? With the things that were going on. But Mayor Bottoms came in and fixed all that. And I mean, and I think we just got to give her credit. She fixed all that. Brian never wants to really give her the credit for being transparent. Now, he's fair. He says she needs to get out there more and use some of her unique abilities to talk to the public. And, you know, there have been times that I agree with him on that. But when are we going to start giving Mayor Bottoms more credit for cleaning up all the things that she was given? She inherited a mess financially, right? Now, there was some surpluses in the city and things, but as far as the spending and card usage, credit card usage and travel and all that's been fixed, Dennis. And I think you're going to hear her start talking about that really, really soon. And it's going to, again, while crime is the preeminent issue, I think it's going to come down to credibility. Who has the credibility based on their record to lead the city? And I think the other thing that we got to be fair on this show is that we give Kasim all of this credit for crime, right? And that he's got this grand plan. But where is it? Let's see it. You know, like, this is not just a Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms issue. If anyone has a plan or solution to deal with crime in the city, which, by the way, is totally different now, totally different environment from when he was mayor and when she's mayor, then let's see his plan. Let's see all their plans, right? I'm shocked that we have not gotten more plans from the candidates. Now, some of them have been talking about it, right? But I'm talking about a concrete blueprint. This is what I would do if I was mayor on day one. People have talked about it, but we haven't seen their plans. And I think that's what I want to see soon in this mayor's race.
One subject we've been meaning to get to for quite a while, and unfortunately, we're going to have to do it very briefly, but there's a reason we need to get to it. According to a report by Andy Miller of Georgia Health News and Brenda Goodman of Medscape and WebMD, this is going back to Trump administration alleged interference again. It is alleged that the Trump administration kept the Environmental Protection Agency from taking action on the cancer-causing risks posed by ethylene oxide, the chemical emitted by plants owned by Sterigenics in Cobb County and BD in Covington. Those plants sterilize medical equipment. We've talked about this in previous episodes of The Political Breakfast. But it's been a while. The companies reached a consent agreement with the state that required them to install new equipment to reduce the emissions of ethylene oxide. But according to the new reporting, there's now a report from the EPA's Inspector General showing that political appointees in the Trump administration interfered with efforts of staff members to find out the extent of contamination of nearby neighborhoods from ethylene oxide. Now, it's a long story. A lot of it is focused actually on a plant in Illinois, but the actions cited by the Inspector General also affected EPA staffers here in Atlanta. And Brian, part of the story, says that state regulators here kept the public in the dark about the work they were doing with the companies on the emission amounts they were reporting to the state. And those amounts turned out to be lower than the amounts they were reporting to the feds. It's been very quiet, but I'm sure this is going to come up in the governor's race. Where is the governor in all of this? Do we know?
You know, I do think he's been involved, and there has been an ongoing conversation between the company and state regulators. One thing that we can't lose sight of here is, you know, as we study and get more data on the impact of this chemical in the air, if it does in fact lead to cancer in nearby communities. I think that's a worthwhile endeavor to look into. Earlier this year and last year, that wasn't the only thing that was on the table. The work done at these factories is cleaning medical equipment, and only these chemicals are appropriate for that work. And so it was a necessity, particularly in a global pandemic. And so the cancer issue, which again is very serious, if it was in my neighborhood, I would certainly be, you know, on high alert about it, is legitimate and concerning. But we also had to look at the healthcare of the entire country, of the 330 million Americans who are depending on these processes happening.
Granted. And I'm sorry to interrupt you. We just have a time problem here. But when it comes to the necessity of sterilizing equipment, there's no debate. But the issue here is interference and whether data were reported accurately.
Yeah. So as far as interference, I think the political arm of the executive branch makes decisions on many things across the board. We're seeing political decisions in executive agencies under the Biden administration too.
So Dennis, I think you raise a really good point. You know, Sterigenics and the unfortunate incidents that happened, I mean, it dominated the news cycle in Georgia and around the country for a while. I think the bottom line here is that no one really likes the sound of chemicals in their backyard, right? And I think we have to let the state, you know, companies like Georgia Power and others do their job. Let's figure out what happened, you know, what is happening, and have a plan of action going forward. So I think this is where the governor is going to really count on his Environmental Protection Division to really step in and work with the Environmental Protection Agency to make sure that they do everything they can to solve this issue.
Very quickly, and Theron, I'll start with you. Is this something that we can expect Democrats to raise in the race for governor, or in the case of a couple of folks who are seeking higher office from that area, possibly in the race for attorney general, for instance? Jen Jordan is running there.
Yeah, and also Eric Allen.
Eric Dennis, Allen, who wrote legislation on this.
Dennis, I think what's going to happen is that you're going to see State Senator Jen Jordan and State Representative Eric Allen, both of whom are seeking higher office. Eric Allen is a candidate for lieutenant governor, and Jen Jordan is a candidate for attorney general, both on the Democratic side. You're going to see it sort of woven in their messaging about why they should run for that office. And I think that they will say, you know, we were hit with this crisis in my district or near my district. This is what I did. I think for Governor Kemp, he has an opportunity to say, you know, this was very unfortunate, but when we learned of the problem, this is what I did. And remember, this was very controversial, Dennis. There was a lot of conversations about the governor kind of feeling like he was maybe being lied to. He didn't use the word lied, you know, the term lied to, but basically he felt that there was some misinformation that was coming from Sterigenics to his office. And he was very bold in saying, hey, I want the truth. And so now going forward, I do think you'll see him in the EPD department work with other agencies to deal with it.
I think whether or not this is a pressing issue in the 2022 campaign will depend on if there is new news. If it's 18 months in the rearview mirror, I don't know that people are going to be too concerned about it, and candidates are going to spend precious resources on an issue where they're having to educate people on what they're talking about. But if it's in the news and people are responding to it and there's backlash, then all of a sudden you've got a lightning rod issue that you can glom onto. We don't know yet if that's going to be the case here.
Speaking of new news, one little bit of new news involves me. As we speak, I am in my second to last episode on Political Breakfast. This because of a personal decision that I've made to step aside to spend some more time on more personal endeavors. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the next episode, but much bigger new news. WABE colleague Lisa Hagan won a Pulitzer Prize for her work on, in collaboration with some folks from other NPR affiliates and NPR itself, on No Compromise, the podcast that delves into the politics and money in one corner of the gun debate. Big congratulations to her, and also to our WABE colleague Hank Klibanoff, who works on the podcast Buried Truth, which has already won a Peabody Award. This for his nomination by President Biden to a task force that continues to work on cold cases of crimes against African Americans and others from the early days of the civil rights movement. This is huge news on both fronts, and wanted to give you both a chance to sound off on that.
Yeah, now congratulations to Lisa. That's a huge honor. And I am aware of the fact that other WABE podcasts keep winning really prestigious awards nationally. The Pulitzer, of course, Hank's podcast got a Peabody Award. And what I like to think, guys, is that I'm the problem. And here's why I'm the problem. I think we would get a Peabody Award, but I am on the board at Grady College at the University of Georgia, which administers the Peabody Award. So I think that we are conflicted out from those awards because of me. And so I apologize to both of you that I have kept us from getting to that New York City ceremony where we collect our Peabody Awards. But congratulations to Lisa and to Hank for those great accomplishments. And to those who are picking these winners, please listen to Political Breakfast.
Well, Brian, you know what? I didn't want to believe you when you first start saying that, but I think you actually have some truth, brother. You may have to maybe resign your board position so we can get some awards and then make back on. But no, Dennis, a huge shout out and big, you know, congratulations to Lisa and Hank. I mean, you know, I would tell you this, the work that they put in, the research that it takes to have a successful podcast. I mean, we know it firsthand, right? Look how many hours you spend, Dennis, and, you know, hours, Brian and I spend preparing for these podcasts. And so I definitely think they deserve these awards. And definitely, Dennis, I know we'll talk about this more later, but you know, again, as I said earlier, I want to thank you for supporting me in my decision politically not to, to run. And family was the preeminent, most important issue for me, you know, and I think you should be commended and it should be honored that you want to spend more time with your family in this next chapter of your life. So thank you for making that choice. And we're going to miss you, brother, but we'll stay in touch, I'm sure.
And that's it for this week's Political Breakfast. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Brian Robinson is a Republican strategist, a communications consultant, and former deputy chief of staff for Governor Nathan Deal. Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist, a public affairs and government consultant, and most recently a senior advisor to the Biden Georgia campaign. Thanks so much to both of you.
Happy Father's Day to Theron, to my dad, and to all the fathers out there in WABE land.
Happy Father's Day to everyone, and let's go Hawks.
And you can follow us on Twitter. Brian is at Lord Tinsdale. That's T-I-N-S-D-A-L-E. Theron is at Theron Johnson. And I'm at D-E-N-I-S-O-H-A-Y-E-R. Our thanks to Kevin Rinker and Lowell Berlanti for their production assistance. And if you like this show, please subscribe. It is free wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to rate us. That, of course, is a great way to make sure other people can find us. And don't forget to check out all those other fantastic podcasts from WABE, up-to-the-minute information on the coronavirus on Did You Wash Your Hands with Sam Whitehead, the Peabody Award-winning Buried Truths, Hank Klibanoff, unearths details about the murder of Ahmaud Arbery in Brunswick. We talked about that. And we certainly mentioned the Pulitzer Prize-winning No Compromise with Lisa Hagan. And here on Political Breakfast, we'll be back in your feed and in your head real soon with more nourishing political conversation. Be sure to join us and have a great and a safe week.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WABE politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WABE politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WAB.org or your favorite podcast platform.